Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fated Mates. This time around, I suggested to Sarah that we should pick an interstitial topic where we are only going to talk about historicals. We kicked around a lot of ideas, but landed on Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, she came at me with, let's do historicals, and I felt like,
you were supposed to feel seen. You were supposed to be like, yes, Jen understands me.
Like, there's only one kind.
That's it. Just one.
Just one kind. But no, we did. We picked Scotland because I feel like Scotland, there's a lot to say about Scotland.
Do you follow, on Twitter, I follow a woman named Lily 80, I think is her actual.
Oh, yeah.
And she, here's, I think, the brilliant thing she said. We were talking about Julie Garwood, and she said that she imprinted on Julie Garwood.
I think she's not alone.
And I was like, yes. And I think the reason Scotland's really interesting to me, even though I don't read tons of historicals anymore the same way, is it is for sure like the imprint and figuring that out and talking about like why Julie Garwood in particular. And then like why Scotland is just like a really interesting question to me, because I'm fascinated by Romancelandia's, like, of all the countries in the world, y'all. Maybe it's because men wear skirts.
I mean, the kilt is part of it. I mean, the part of the imprint of Julie Garwood is those old school books where they were road trip romances, essentially, right? I mean, in their purest form, right? And it was a English lady who'd been sold to a Scottish laird for some sort of land, you know, whatever. And, you know, but he couldn't go pick her up at the border because he was too busy. So he sent his, like, most trusted guy to go
in
get
a
her.
Skirt.
And he was wearing a skirt. And they would ride, you know, they would ride on this horse. And she would hurt, like, her bottom would hurt. And then they would have to stop overnight because they couldn't ride through the night because of her sensitive bottom. And then, but of course, he was, like, drawn to her. And she was drawn to him. But she wasn't his fated wife. And he wasn't her, you know, husband, her betrothed. And then they would, you know, wrap them. Then it would rain or it would be cold and he would wrap them in his kilt.
Those kilts must be like electric blankets levels of warmth. Everyone always feels so warm in a kilt.
Men are super hot in kilts.
Sure.
So they would just, his body heat and her, like, she would be freezing cold and her little feet, her waist that he could span with just his fingers.
Of course.
Tiny
of
wee.
Course. Oh boy.
And then by the time they got back to Scotland to the, you know, the laird, they'd already, you know, done it, and it was just a big mess.
Well, in Julie Garwood, though, it often is the laird, right? You gotta fall in love with the head guy.
Sure. You gotta fall in love, or, you know, but I think that's part of it, though. Like, that's part of the draw of Scotland. Like, everybody's sort of a head guy. Because
yeah,
these are
that's
all like
true.
Medievals, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
they're not anymore. A lot of us, I've written a Scott book. It was set in Victorian England. But, you know, let's be honest. The appeal of the Scotsman is the, like, exotic, like, bestial, primitive.
Like, I know. I'm sorry, people from Scotland.
Dude.
You all seem very nice, not like that at all.
Oh, they love
it. I think...
It.
You know what's actually really interesting to me? I know that we both listened to the Heaving Bosoms podcast, mm-hmm. and they call this, like, instead, you're, like, using this official word, medieval, and they use the word Highland times. Highlander times. And there's something so perfect about that to me, because it really is romanticizing, right? It's romanticizing all romances, but particularly sort of the Highlander, rough, rugged individual, the clan.
Everything is waved away in Scotland. Everything is green and beautiful. No one's ever cold. I've been to Scotland like 6 times in my life. Every time I've been there, it's been freezing. I've had to buy one of those sweaters. The truth of Scotland, I mean, look, I will say Scotland is totally bananas stunning at any time of the year. But, you know, like, Scotland is it's shorthand for something.
Yeah. And I would love for us to unpack that. I'm really interested in it. I think the other thing about Julie Garwood, though, and maybe I'll start if I can start talking
about.
When I was really torn, by the way.
Which one to pick?
God, I know. Well, and I was like, should I pick The Secret or should I pick The Bride? Because those are definitely my two favorites. And I'm now, you can't see me, Romance Landy. I'm holding them up because I have my.
She's got the original Secret.
Why were the paperbacks like yellow on the edges? Do you know that?
I don't know.
It's not attractive at all.
You know, I can ask somebody and we can come back to it.
Will you ask somebody? It's just not attractive at all. All right. So I really do think that the secret is the one that I read the most. And I'm going to tell you why, because it's not just about, well, let me tell you like really quickly, like the summary, right? Judith Hampton is a young English girl and she meets her best friend, Frances Catherine, at a fair, a festival or whatever, like right on the border. And Frances Catherine is Scottish and Judith is English and they're not supposed to be friends, but they're really little and they are. And the thing about this book, it's not just a romance. It's about female friendship and about female enemies and about like women in general. And this book still, I think, is, I mean, that's the imprint too, that like women are in charge of their own destiny, even if men think they can't be in romance.
Yep.
So I'd imprinted like, yes, the romance part and the Highlander part, but also that female friendship is important and that romances that really respect that women will do anything for each other. It's really powerful in this book. And that's another big part, I think, of the imprint for me.
Julie Garwood always did that so well. There were always strong secondary female characters in her books. And to be totally honest, a lot of the old school romance writers did not do that.
Yeah.
Joanna Lindsay was really great at families, like brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
But she never really did the kind of friends. And Judith McNaught was sort of mainly wrote like loner heroines.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love that about Julie's books too.
So basically what happens is, they meet as girls and then they're young women. I'm sure they're 19 or whatever, but you know,
they're probably even younger than that. They were always so young.
God, they were so young. Oh, well, anyway, Frances Catherine is pregnant and she's really worried that she's going to die during childbirth. And she sends for her best friend, Judith, who essentially has promised that that's not going to happen to her. And Judith, even though it's forbidden, has learned everything she can about midwifery. And so she, essentially, Frances Catherine's brother-in-law is the Laird, Ian Maitland. And he, I know, he's a great hero. And he essentially promises his brother, like, sure, I'll go get your wife's friend without really realizing what he was getting
there,
into.
He's going to go pick her up.
He's going to go pick
her
up.
Wrap her in a kilt.
Oh, God. With his really handsome men, right?
God, I didn't wrap heroin in a kilt at all in my Scottish book. What a fucking mistake that was. I apologize,
missed opportunity.
No, I'm going to write a second epilogue.
I would say, just do it. Write a second, like, just do it on Twitter. And then he wrapped her in a kilt in front of a roaring fire.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just think this book is really spectacular. And I think, you know, there's a lot of interesting politics with inside the clan. There's a whole subplot about the actual midwife in the clan who does not think Judith has any business being a midwife.
Yeah.
There's a whole other subplot about the priests and whether or not women should suffer in childbirth. I mean, this book, it has it all.
Yeah,
it does.
Well, it should. I mean, it's look, for me, there were like four horsewomen of my romantic apocalypse. And it
was Sarah.
Jude Devereaux, Joanna Lindsay, Judith McNaught, and Julie Garwood. And I read all of their books.
Yeah.
All the time. Like, every time. I would just reread. Like, if I couldn't.
Oh, me too.
If I didn't have time, I would. If I didn't have access to a bookstore or a library, like, I just reread all those books. And I mean, she's the best for a reason.
Yeah, it's amazing.
There's that moment. So this is not the secret. This is The Bride, which is many, many people's favorite Garwood book.
I was really torn about which one to talk to, but I really wanted to talk about this female friendship thing. And Jamie in The Bride is, it's, she's really alone. It's not really her own doing. But I think that was like what tipped it over to the secret for me.
Yeah. Well, there's that great, I mean, and I talk about being imprinted, right? So I don't think we've talked about it yet, but I'm sure at some point, because Cressley, we're going to talk about heroes who say things like, you're mine.
Which, oh, yeah.
A lot of people have a lot of opinions about it. My opinion is, yes, please, more.
In real life, I'd be like, no, I'd be my like, own.
Let me put your head on a pike.
In a romance, I'm like, yes, you're yeah, more, his, more, girl, more. You are
and
his.
And the reason why is because there's this amazing quote from The Bride where Alec brings his new bride home to Scotland, to his clan, and he stands her up in front of the whole clan, and she says, "This is my wife." And somebody says, "What's she called, Kincaid?"
Oh, and he says,
and he says, "Mine." And I mean, 12-year-old Sarah is dead on the floor. And 40-year-old Sarah is also dead on the floor.
I will admit that I got the shivers. It's amazing. It's amazing. You know what else, though? The thing about these Julie Garwood books, though, is even though there's this, like, you're mine, I think these heroes had so much respect for them and what they could do.
Mm-hmm.
And, right? And they're both, it's about healing, right? Jamie's a healer and Judith is, like, a midwife, essentially. But...
Mm-hmm.
And that was it, too. Like, yes, you're mine, but I respect you for you. And these books. I've read The Secret so many times and The Bride that I feel like there are entire, like, sections of it that just come back. Like, I'm sure I could recite them.
Oh, for sure. And then there's, do you remember The Wedding that begins with the prologue and the hero is standing at the altar? And he's like an 18-year-old boy or something, and you know that he's been betrothed.
Yes.
And she's like a little girl, and she runs up the aisle, and he catches her up into his arms, and he's like her friend.
Yeah.
He's like completely not interested in her as anything because she's a child, and she's like, I'm going to make you love me someday. And then it's like 20 years later. Boom, it begins.
Oh my God. Ugh. It's like, really, honestly, I'm going to get off this podcast and then spend the whole rest of the day rereading these books, probably. That's how good they are.
I know. But okay, so here's the other thing about Scotland. It's usually shorthand for medieval, mm-hmm. like I said. And I think part of the joy of medieval historicals is that we suspend disbelief more because of the location and the time period, right?
Yeah.
So things like if somebody today wrote the arranged marriage between a 4-year-old and a grown man, and the first chapter was that, we would say like, ugh, no thank you.
Yeah.
Right? No, gross, no thank you. Because medieval, we sort of like pull ourselves back from that story and we think about it. I mean, like, granted, look, it's just the prologue, and it's very clear that there's nothing untoward between these two people. But like, I still think it's like guardian ward romances work really. Mm-hmm. My pick is a guardian ward romance, and they work really well in medieval because there's the power structure is a very different kind of power structure.
Right.
And we're sort of willing to, they're bonkers. The books are bananas. And like, we never think twice about it.
Yeah, the barrier for entry for kind of like getting into that story or seems lower.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's less of our feeling of like, wait, people knew that shit was wrong.
Yeah.
And I know that shit's
wrong.
And
also, like,
right?
We're more willing to like melt into a puddle on the floor when Alec Kincaid says mine in front of like a room full of, you know, crazy kilted men.
Because it wasn't even a room. It was like out in a clearing.
In the wilderness.
In front of his castle.
Yeah. And like, we're totally willing to suspend the disbelief that like these guys who are flying free inside their filthy kilts, like on horses for like months on end, smell like man and not foul stench. Ugh. Right. I mean, like, we are medieval. You set something in medieval and you immediately get a free pass to like make things crazy. You know, I mean, we're here because of IAD, right? Like, I mean,
right. We love the crazy.
We love the crazy. And it should be said before I talk about mine, like, we should say the McCarrick brothers exist, which predates. So this is Cressley's Scottish trilogy. It's set in the 1830s or 40s. And it's three Scottish brothers. And if you love the Roth brothers, you will love the McCarrick brothers. They're sort of like
prototypical,
right, you know, beta. Okay, so my pick is Monica McCarty's The Arrow, and it's book 9 of her Highland Guard series, which is an incredible series. Basically, the log line for this series is Special Forces meets Scotland. So, yeah.
How do people know? Like, they just dive into my soul and find what I want, Sarah.
So the concept is, like, it's set during the time of Robert the Bruce, who is trying to free Scotland from the evil English overlords. And in order to do so, he has assembled this elite task force.
They all have, like, what's a dirk? Do they all have dirks?
Probably.
You know, that weapon?
A dirk is like a knife attached to a belt, I think.
Fine.
I think. They have swords. They have broadswords, what they have. I mean, and they have broadswords, if you know what I mean. So, but...
Podcast over.
And they have names like the Chief and the Hawk and, like, the Viper and the Ghost.
Of course. And,
I mean, because obviously they do. Anyway, this book is called The Arrow, and it is a Guardian Ward romance. It's book 9 in the series. You don't have to read them in order. Like, they're all just, like, they're like Suzanne Brockman, but Scottish, yeah. Right? You can read them in whatever order you want. The Arrow is obviously a marksman. He's great with a bow and arrow. And he has been away, like, at war, fighting with his brethren, his men-at-arms, trying to save Scotland from England. His lands are borderlands, and so he's had raids on his lands before, and years ago, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago, there was a terrible raid on his lands by Englishmen, and a girl was orphaned, and he finds her like mute and you know, just broken by the loss of her parents. And he takes her with him to his home, and he claims her as his ward. And he says,
"Oh wow, interesting.
She can live here." And he's like, "Whatever, she can live here. Like, I have this big house, and I'm never here because I'm saving the world." And then off he goes.
I'm out arrowing.
Exactly.
It's a verb now. I just made it so.
Yep. So he goes off. He starts to arrow. He does all of his arrowing. He comes back 10 years later or something, and this little girl who he saved is now like 20 years old and living the life, because she's like, I don't have to get married, I don't have to worry, I'm a ward of like this guy who never comes home. And she's like delightful. She's brilliant and funny, and like she can, you know, shoot an arrow at 50 paces, and she's just like a cool, she's somebody you want to be your friend. And he turns up and he's like, holy crap, who is this woman? Why am I feeling feelings for her?
Yeah.
And it's delightful because he feels obviously like all, it's actually really lovely. Like, one of the struggles of Guardian Ward is that in 2018, it's real tough to write Guardian Ward and not have her feel gross.
Yeah. But if he hasn't seen her in 10 years and now she's a grown up.
He didn't know her really. Like, it's that sort of balance of, well, when she was a child, there was no, everything was very like above board. And now he's back and he's like, oh, and then he's also sort of racked with this sort of like, well, I'm too old for her. And like, she's my ward and this is all weird. Like, he sort of has the cognitive dissonance in his own head. And it's really delightful. So I recommend the whole series. And they're totally bingeable, and Monica writes romantic suspense too. She really like has the pacing down here for these books. They're great. Highland Guard.
That's awesome. You're dangerous to my TBR, and I know we are dangerous to everyone's TBR, but I have no regrets. I'm going to talk about The Madness of Lord Ian McKenzie by Jennifer Ashley. Oh,
I love this
which
one.
It's really fascinating, and you know, it's a book, like one of those books like you just hear about a lot. I feel like, right, like there's a certain subset of books that you bring them up and a lot of people are like, oh, I really love that one, or it's really good, or it's doing something really interesting. And so this book is Ian McKenzie is the youngest brother of a very powerful duke. And he is, everyone thinks he's mad because he spent years in an asylum as a child. And it's really interesting. I found myself wondering how modern readers, or like how readers now, kind of feel about the portrayal of him, because I'm sure people are basically like trying to diagnose him with like kind of modern day medical, you know, is he OCD? Is he on the autism spectrum? Does he have a...
Well, Jennifer has said he's on the spectrum. That you can safely say, and as far as she's concerned, there you can safely place him on the autism spectrum.
Yeah. And, or, you know, there's another part where he has some, like, really interesting responses to, like, tactile things. He doesn't like water that's too hot, whatever. And, I, you know, so that was, like, interesting to me because he's such a fascinating character. He has, you know, like, essentially a perfect recall of conversations and things he's read. He has, like, essentially a... like a photographic memory, mm-hmm. although it was pre-photographed, so I don't know what they called it back then. And he falls in love with a woman named Beth Ackerley, who is the widow of a sort of a vicar. And she came into some money. She was a longtime caretaker, sort of not ladies maid, but companion to a woman who left her a ton of money. And all of a sudden, she's an heiress. And what I found fascinating about this book was like both the relationship between them, but also I found the pacing of this book for a historical to be really interesting to me.
Why?
I feel like many historicals, not all of them, right? This is a gross generalization, are sort of a like, we're going to meet and our end goal is marriage. And that did not happen in this book at all, right? They get together really quickly. She's a widow. She doesn't have sort of the like virginal, but oh no, I could never. She knows what sex is and misses it.
Yep. She had a really fine marriage. Status,
yeah, right. She missed her husband desperately. She misses that sort of physical closeness. And because she spent her life, I don't know, she's just a very different character, right? She's not of the aristocracy. She's like really come up through, she's seen some shit, Sarah. So I think part of the pacing thing too was that, you know, very quickly he says, I mean, it's essentially the first thing he says to her is like, marry me. It's like the end of the first chapter or two. And so then the plot becomes not really about, is this the right person for me to marry? But like, what is it going to mean to have a marriage or a relationship with someone who everybody in London thinks is different? And then there's like a whole big subplot about like the past of the Mackenzie family and what his brothers have been up to, and a police sort of a Scotland Yard inspector who thinks that a murder has been committed and mm-hmm. one of the brothers have done it. So I just found it like, you know, it was very pleasing to me that there was, I don't know, it wasn't just a marriage plot, right? Like, it was very much a plot about, like, we're two adults. Are we well-suited for each other? And what is that going to mean? And I feel like that isn't always what I expect in historical. And I know that's, like I said, maybe that means I'm reading the wrong ones. But it was really interesting to me. And I think a big part of that was about them as sexual beings. Like, they have a ton of sex, and it's very... I mean, one of the first things he says to her is that, like, he basically wants to, like, go down on her.
Yeah.
He uses the word cunny. We are going to talk about this. And I was like, whoa. Oh,
it's such a filthy word.
I know. But it really, and that was the other thing. Like, there was no sense that, like, these brothers have seen some things. They are really, you know, they use their money. They visit courtesans. They go to clubs where, like essentially, you know, Regency pole dancers or whatever are doing their thing. It was just really interesting to me that they're strippers. I don't know what to call them.
Sure.
But it was that, I don't know, I thought that was all really interesting in terms of like the sexual identity of both characters was not something to be hidden until marriage. It was something that was a big part of who they were from the very beginning.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I mean, I love this book. This is one of my very, very favorite historicals. It's right at the top of my recommended reads page. And it has been for years because I just think it's so smart and I think it's so well done. Jennifer often leans into subplots. Like her books are very
yes.
meaty. They like, they're a good place to start if you've never read a historical romance, I think. Which is sort of strange because in this particular case, you've got a hero who's like curious and you've got a heroine who's not, who's atypical to historicals. But if you are a person who really likes to read like mysteries or, you know, books that have plot, and I'm the first one to say like plot often gets in the way of romance novels.
Sure, because you just want them kissing.
Exactly. Then Jennifer's a really good place. And this is a great series. The whole series is really great. There's one about a painter that's Lady Isabella's Scandalous Marriage.
I know. I want that one.
I love it so much. The pacing of it is so different than anything else. I mean, I think Jennifer just, she's such a smart, thoughtful writer. I think she, she's like a writer's writer, which is a, you know, I mean that in like the most complimentary way. Like she just, she's always trying new stuff.
Yeah. And it was hard because I was really like, it felt different reading it. And I don't often really struggle to like put a name on why.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just because I'm not quite as well versed. But like we talked about the Julie Garwood imprint. This is not the Julie Garwood imprint at all. No. And I think that's why I wanted to talk about it. Like sometimes I feel like, okay, great. I love Julie Garwood, but that's not all historicals do. And this to me was like, it's almost like it's polar opposite. Like this is also what historicals can do. And I feel like maybe some of us who love contemporary can be resistant to historical, and we shouldn't be. There's plenty of really, like, fascinating, like, hard-hitting...
Layered. Like, it's very layered.
Yeah, right.
In a way that Garwood's historicals aren't. And again, I don't say that pejoratively. Like,
no, not at all.
Julie Garwood is not angling to write you a sort of meaty, layered novel. Julie Garwood is doing a different thing. She's writing you.
Yeah.
I mean, and also she's doing it a different time too, right? Like the what we didn't talk about those early Garwoods is this concept of like those heroes are so impenetrable. Like the story of the plot of those old school romances is the unlocking of the hero.
Like yes.
The movement right. from hero who feels nothing and says nothing and is nothing. Right. Is nothing emotional. He is pure, like active logic and reason to emotional being.
Yeah. And that's kind of true for Ian McKenzie,
but in like a different way. It's not the same at all. Like no. Ian is so the unlocking of Garwood's Ian is. Yeah. Very much about like unlocking his emotions, period. Like because he is at point A of the book completely without emotional anything, and at point X of the book like he's pure emotion for her. The unlocking of Ian is the unlocking of like the understanding of him. Like he's all there, every piece of him is packed into him on page one of the book, and like the whole thing is like unpacking him for Beth.
Yeah. Well, and Beth's also unpacking of like the family, which is why I very much would like to read the rest of this series is, you know, like we often get brothers, but in this case, like they're in a they love each other and they have each other's backs, but they also fundamentally misunderstand each other. And in a way, she's there to sort of help them like make some new patterns as a family that they couldn't do without her. My guess is Isabella's going to do the same thing, but she leaves. She's like, I'm out. And I'm really fascinated about like what's going to get her back into that. And
I love a broken marriage romance, will come as no surprise.
Same.
And it's funny. That's a good example of something that like over time I've come to love them. I didn't love them. I mean, now I'm married, right? So it's a.
Right. It's a different
thing. It's a different kind of experience to read a broken marriage when you're married than it is to read one when you can't even imagine
when
what
you're
it
20.
Must be like to be married, right? Like, why wouldn't you just be done with that guy and move on?
I know. So, yeah, I really loved this book, and I'm really excited to continue on with this series.
Can we talk about Connie? Because So now, how do we feel about Connie? Because
I'm going to be like...
Long-term Sarah McLean followers on Twitter will know that I have a great deal of passion for foul language and the etymology of it because humans have been filthy for way longer than we've not been filthy.
Yeah.
And every single terrible word that you can come up with
has been around
predates,
for a long time.
Like most of the good words you can come up with.
And you know what? That's one thing. Let's return to cunt in a minute. But one of the things I find really interesting about this book too was that I felt like it used foul language, and I know many readers, my sense is from talking to authors that some historical readers read historicals because they think they're going to be sanitized of language like that, and they actually think it's ahistorical when in fact it's the exact opposite.
I get,
and I'm
so
fascinated by that
email, Jen.
Yeah,
I get, every time I have a new book out, I get a month of email from people who really hate the word fuck, like hate it and think that it's crass and coarse and it would never be used. And it's totally false. I mean, fuck dates to the 15th century Middle German.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, so did shit too is real old. and what's interesting is, so there aren't that many words. So sometimes you're writing a hero, like I am right now, who is dirty, who, like, you know, I'm writing a series about men who grew up in Covent Garden and like were raised in the gutter as like street fighters, and they have dirty mouths and like they think dirty thoughts. And so like, if you're gonna write a hero that way, then you want to use dirty language. But for me, cunny, like for me, Sarah McLean in 2018, cunny is like too gross. Before we go down this road, I'm just going to say, cunny dates to 1593, and the first printed use of it, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, is Christopher Marlowe. So
there you go, right?
I mean, so it's for real. And it, the line is, the whore stands to be bought for each man's money and seeks vild wealth by selling of her cunny.
Well, there you go.
Thank you.
I don't know why does this. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because it's like, I feel like I don't have a problem with cunt, really. It doesn't seem sexy to me.
Yeah.
I guess it's like quim. Is that your other choice? Is quim, pussy around
quim is
then?
Such a laughable word for me. It's really. Right. So, okay. You can also. So, okay. Here, we're down the rabbit hole. I have the OED open as we do this. So cunt is real old. 1230. I mean,
wow.
And that's, so fun fact, 1230. And that's because there was a street in London named Grope Cunt Lane, which was where the prostitutes were. You could go there and touch vulvas. So like it was so much a used term that it was a street name. And so
interesting.
It definitely predates 1230, but books barely do that. So. And then there's quim, and quim, it's fine. It's coarse slang. Like, it works in romance novels. We've all read it in our historicals. It dates from the 1600s. I still like pussy.
Yeah.
Which dates also from the 1600s, 1699.
Yeah.
And in song. It's written. I mean, it's a very, very filthy song, which we can link to in show notes.
Yes, I will do that.
I'm not going to sing or read to read to
let's
you.
Let's not do it.
Because it'll take time. But so for me, I guess like it's pussy, but pussy feels very modern. So I feel like putting pussy in a book, a historical, could easily get you the emails.
Yeah, but cunny is just whew.
Yeah. It's real gross.
Have you read, there's a book, and it's, my friend and I read it. It's called Cunt, A Declaration of Independence. Have you read this book?
No, but I'm going to buy it right now.
Yeah, it's like 20 years old, and I think it was really interesting to read now. I don't know that I would recommend it. And part of the reason why is because everything about the book is talking about like part of me agrees with it, like regaining our cunts. Like as our friend SS Jackson has like a really long thread about how like women don't even know anything about their own vaginas. But at the same time, like if you're just defining womanhood by our body parts, then we are really excluding trans people. And that's not okay either. So I think part of the reason that that's such an interesting like dilemma, right, is as we are like, and we've talked about this before, as we become more and more inclusive about gender and there being all genders, then that means like defining your gender identity by like what body parts you have can be a problem, is a problem. And I just, so yeah, it's like a weird book. It was like very powerful reading it, but it also felt just really dated in a way that I found myself thinking like, if I'm just defining womanhood by what body parts you have, then I'm excluding a lot of people and that's not right.
Absolutely. I think the challenge with all of this is that women have never been allowed to really think about their body parts in public the way men have. And so the struggle is we haven't come to a place where women who are born with vaginas, you know, feel comfortable with their body. Right. And so there's a struggle because it feels like we need to fight both battles at the same time, which of course we do. Right. Because patriarchy.
Well, and I wonder if that's not like the real, it's some level like the real appeal of dirty talk is that it's like one of the only times you get to really talk about it.
Yeah. And without judgment. Right. Like,
right.
You get to talk about what feels good and what.
Like what is doing
what and what you're touching and what you're experiencing without shame. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about dirty talk, as you know, and we'll get to them, I'm sure. Since we're talking about books that I love and foul language, there's a book called Holy Shit, A Brief History of Swearing, which was the PhD.
How do I not own this?
The PhD dissertation of a woman named Melissa Moore, who studied at Oxford. And like, had I known I could get a PhD in swearing, for sure, I would have done that instead. So this book is amazing. I love, love, love it. And I cannot recommend it enough. And I'm constantly citing it when my mom yells at me for having foul language in the house.
I'm about to buy this book, although I promised myself I wouldn't buy books in January. But I'm like, maybe.
You're like, well, I have to know the history of swearing.
Obviously. That's just research.
And sometimes, usually about two or three weeks after I put a book out, I get really irritated with all the emails. And then I just take to Twitter. And I spend a lot of time telling the etymology of swear words. And so you can always follow me there. Periodically.
It's like worth it.
I'll just lose my mind and tell you all the different ways that we've used the word, you know, fuck in history. Fun fact, the word flying fuck, the phrase flying fuck, which you would think was modern. You would think that would be like 1950s, 1960s, is like the 1700s. And it was used it was used as a euphemism for sex on horseback. Maybe it's not a euphemism. I guess it's not a euphemism.
Sarah! Really? Oh my God, I have a whole post about sex on horseback, right? I did. That was me. I felt like that was like the best thing I've ever written. I thought I would never top it in Romancelandia, and now we're fated mates. It's better.
So we'll link to that in show notes, and we will link to the image of it's a cartoon, like a drawing of two people having sex on horseback. And it says, and it has it right there, flying fuck. So we'll link
to
that too.
I'm so into that.
But I still have one more book.
You do. I was like, remember back in the day, we were like, our interstitial episodes will be like 10 minutes.
No time at all. I did warn, I warned our producer, Eric, that this one was going to be long because I was going to talk about swear words.
Yes.
So, okay. This one is Jennifer McQuiston's What Happens in Scotland. And I have a lot to say about this book, which is her debut. And I often find that debut historicals are the most magnificent historicals because they're usually born of like a lifetime of reading historicals.
Yes.
And then you just pour out your favorite tropes into a book and you deliver this like magnificent thing. But also because Jenny doesn't write anymore. And so I want to talk about just how awesome she is and how awesome her books are. But this book, What Happens in Scotland, was pitched to me by her editor, after I had already been writing for Avon for a little while. And this editor, her editor said to me, like, you're going to love this book. You are going to love this book. It's The Hangover, but Scottish. And I was like, Hangover, but Scottish. Sign me up. So the hero and heroine Don't know each other. Lady Georgette, she is like a woman who has no interest in getting married. And she wakes up in the morning and she is in a trash hotel room in Scotland on like the Great North Road. And next to her is a naked man she has never seen before. Whoa. And they are both wearing wedding rings.
Whoa.
And
I'm like, I want it so bad.
The whole book is told in like maybe 48 hours because they wake up and they're like, holy shit, we're married. And then they have to retrace the steps of the night before to figure out what happened. So it has
That's
this
amazing.
Like wild cast of characters who all have like bits and pieces and like parts to play in this magnificent story. And then at the end, you have two people who didn't know each other when they woke up in the morning and now are in love. And it is so, so, so good.
That's I'm amazing.
Absolutely in love with it. And I feel that I need to say on top of all of this that Jenny, well, first of all, before I say this, I think this is another good example of how Scotland as a touchstone, like as a shorthand, lets us ignore like a lot of, like you sort of wave away a lot of things, right? Like all the characters are you know, sort of wild. It's like a farce, right? Where yeah. all the characters are a little bit crazy and a little bit wild, and none of them really have like, but you sort of accept them all because they're Scottish, right? Like everybody here yeah. is just wacky and Scottish. And then the whole story's happening in Scotland. And so it just feels like there's like a mythology and like a magic to Scotland that there isn't to other places, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I do think like anytime a book is set somewhere else, you know, it especially in a historical where it's like it's almost always London. It does. It feels like you're saying, I'm going to do something different. These people are going to experience something different. They're yep. going to be different in this different place.
Yes.
And, you know, I get that.
And Jenny stopped writing a few years ago because she is a researcher at the CDC. And
That's
she
amazing.
Was working on like Ebola. And she just realized that she couldn't do both because she was busy saving the world.
That's awesome.
And so
that's amazing.
She's still on Twitter. She's still on Facebook. She travels. She's like in Africa a ton working there. And she's basically like, she's amazing in every way. And
that's really cool.
So you should buy this book and read it. And my hope is that someday when Jenny decides
like
that
retires.
She's tired of saving the world, which will hopefully be a long time from now, but will happen because she will come back and write more books for us. Also, I just want to make sure that everybody knows that friend of the pod / friend of Sarah /
beloved author by Jen, right?
Sophie
Jordan.
It sounds
so creepy, though.
I know, but she, whatever. We're going to have dinner in Chicago. Oh, also, important note, Faded Mates listeners, Chicago, early April is Avon KissCon, and there's going to be a Faded Mates meetup. So find yeah. us on Twitter for more information, or we'll, you know, try and put it into one of the episodes before then. Anyway, Sophie will be there. I will be there. Jen will be there. Lots and lots of other awesome authors who we've talked about on the podcast will be there. Cressley will not be there, but
she'll be there in spirit.
Yeah. We'll just pretend.
Perhaps as a phantom.
It's probably best that Cressley's not there because, like, it would be weird.
God, I'd probably, like, lick her or something. Oh, my God. I'd be like, Cressley.
Anyway, but the point is that Sophie Jordan has a Scott book coming, This Scott of Mine, which, first of all, I love a good pun. And
oh, yeah, for
I
sure.
I love a this Heart of Mine pun. But also, it's like kind of a classic Scotland book. The hero's super Scottish. Those of you
yeah,
who
I'm really excited
book,
about it.
Yeah, the Duke buys a bride. He's in there, Jen.
Yes.
I can see you wanting to talk.
I know, I'm like, stop, Sarah, let me talk about it. She's your friend. let me talk about it. You know, she. It's actually funny because I read this book. I got The Duke Buys a Bride at RWA and was like, I'm going to read this book. And I think it was maybe the first Sophie Jordan book I read.
It's a good choice.
And in the intervening however many months, I've probably read like 12 of her books. Mm-hmm. And at the end of this book, the Duke's, okay, so the hero of this book has a sister who has been ruined.
Compromised.
It's my, you know what? It's my favorite thing because I feel
yeah,
like
ruination
it's always
is great.
Oh, and it's always the threat of ruination, mm-hmm. but she was full on ruined. And what happens is I actually texted Sophie and was like, hey, Claire is going to end up with that cute Scottish laird, right? I've been reading romance for a long time and I can see it coming, but I just want to make sure. So the idea that this is now like upon us, and I actually have an arc. I've read the first chapter or two only. I've been a little busy and I think there's a curse involved.
There is. It's a classic Scottish curse. So this is possibly the most fun I've ever had brainstorming a book was brainstorming this book with Sophie. You guys, Sophie's one of my best friends in the world, which is why I try very hard not to talk about how much I love her books because I feel like it just sounds like I'm cheating. But Jen is legitimately does not know her.
Right.
But so I'm just going to give you a quick overview of what this book is, and then you should all run out and buy it. And if you love a Scottish book, it's gonna scratch every itch you have. But basically, the heroine has been ruined, and she tells everybody. She says, "Like I'm pregnant, and I need to get myself married." And this real decent friend of her brother's, who happens to be a Scottish laird, has been cursed. And the curse that has been on his family for generations is that no laird of this clan will live to see the birth of his first child. And so he thinks he can sort of sneak around the curse
sure.
by marrying a woman who's already pregnant with someone else's child. Because
clever.
Because you can trick fate.
I really wish I was like in a time traveling romance and then I could go back in time and whisper in his ear from like Cressley land that you can never outrun your fucking curses ever. Hello.
So shenanigans ensue is all I will say because this is pretty close to the full Cressley, this plot. Like, there's a lot going on. There's a curse. There's an old lady, his mother or his aunt. I forget who she is, but basically is like, you're not getting away from this curse. Like, I don't know what you've done. And then on top of it, there is the heroine who has basically, I love a heroine who finagles with the truth a little bit and then gets yeah. herself down a very problematic hole, like, and has to figure out how to get herself out of it because she's also falling in love.
Well, and what I love about it is at the beginning, she's kind of like, okay, I kind of fucked this whole thing up and I'm ruined now, but I'm going to be on the straight and narrow. Like, now
yeah, and then
is the time
just
for me to
yeah.
do it right.
It's really terrific. And I'm not just saying that because she's my friend. I'm saying it because it sort of is everything that we love about Scottish romances. It has all the hallmarks of a great Scottish romance. So this Scott of Mine, it's out March 12th.
And I'm going to go ahead and make a radical guess that Ooh. She's going to be signing copies of it at KissCon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She will.
She'll be signing copies at KissCon. Her local independent bookstore is Katie Budget Books. We'll put this in show notes. You can pre-order yeah. signed copies of the book from Katie in outside Houston.
I've been there because it's close to my in-laws.
Yeah, it's a
I didn't want to leave.
It's a romance mecca of sorts, for sure.
For sure. All right, so that's really exciting and definitely a Scotland book that we are all really looking forward to. And even though I have a digital copy, I'm having a paper acquisition problem and really they seem to be coming in faster and faster.
I've got some problems.
Also, stay tuned. Sophie couldn't join us for this interstitial, but she will be joining us for another interstitial. And she is joining us to talk about The Master when we get to the Game Maker series. And she has a whole theory of Cressley and those Game Maker books that we will definitely dig into. So stay tuned.
That's amazing. Well, we spent a lot of time talking about Scotland today.
We did.
There's a lot to talk about.
It's like almost a full episode, so.
I think it's fine. I'm here for it. Actually, it's funny. I go back and listen to our first interstitials, and I'm like, why were we rushing?
We could have taken more time.
It's okay.
Well, so here's the deal. We are Faded Mates. I'm Sarah McLean. You can find me on Twitter at Sarah McLean. You can find me everywhere at Sarah McLean. And Jen.
I'm Jen Prokop. You can find me on Twitter at Jen Reads Romance. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a review. You can tweet to us at Faded Mates, or we're on Instagram. I believe it's Faded Mates Pod. And we would love to hear from you. And we are also always like open to recommendations for interstitial topics that you would like us to cover.
And as always, if you are interested in any of the books that we're reading, that we're talking about, everything is listed in show notes at our website, fadedmates.net.
See you in Scotland, everyone.